Hey, it's Saturday, May 1st, 2010, May Day, 10:06 a.m. on the Central Coast of California. Today on Geek Speak, Geek News with Miles, Al, and myself, Lyle Troxell. And of course, it's time now for Geek Speak. Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gap between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP. To all our live listeners last week, you know that we re-aired a show because we weren't here. I'll mention quickly that the reason we weren't here is because I broke my back. That's right, a little bit of fractures of my spine, but I'm here a week later to do a show with you guys. Last week, we aired a wonderful show from, I think, June of 2010 with Steve Wozniak. And you can listen to that on our website if you missed it. And to the podcast listeners, be sure to catch my 15-minute update. If you didn't get in your feed, just go to iTunes and check it out. If you don't listen to our show via podcast, do so. Even if you don't listen to it, you just listen live. Go up to, you know, get iTunes, go up to NPR, find GeekSpeak, subscribe to it. And that way, you know, you take a look at us in a different way. And if you like it, that format, you enjoy doing that, write a review. Anybody can write a review. Hey, the theme song today was from Michael Newman of Pet Star Music. Michael, thank you very much. If you'd like to participate by giving us a theme song or some other content for our website, we'd love to have your creativity work for us. GeekSpeak is a Creative Commons product, which means that you can use it after we're done using it, which means right after we're off air, you can go ahead and rebroadcast it, reuse it, mix it, anything you'd like. Drop us a note if you do, because we'd love to know. All right. This is GeekSpeak. Welcome. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the air with me are geeks Miles Elam. Good morning, Miles.
Good morning.
And Miles, I've been saying you're a slacker for so long, but now I know that you're deep in the thralls of looking for work, which is hard. And your skill sets, Java, some C++, a lot of teaching experience in the technical world. What else do you do?
Well, you know, just sit around watching movies.
Slacker.
Yeah.
And we also have Al Lucca, and Al Lucca is a new media architect, which means that he comes in and saves the day for corporations in design, user interface. He's quite good and capable. Hi.
Yeah, and on the bright side to you breaking your back, It is proof positive that you are not spineless like a lot of people assert.
Yes.
Oh, man, that is such a nice uncompliment. Was it somebody said to me yesterday, I love this quote, Lyle, you're not even smart enough to win a Darwin Award. I thought that was pretty clever. I broke my back by my own stupidity. I was working in a tree with a chainsaw about 8 feet up, cutting down a limb, and I had it kind of tied up to save an apple tree. In hindsight, not such a good decision. And cut through it.
Did you save the apple tree?
It's totally fine.
Well, see, it was just as a question of priority.
Yeah, I didn't. Yeah, exactly. The thing is, I couldn't have. Yeah, it's true. An apple tree that actually doesn't produce apples anymore versus my spine. It's a toss-up, yeah. Really.
Spines heal, whatever.
just so everybody knows right now, Lyle is actually in the studio in a wheelchair with a chest brace on. So it's not like, I mean, he's a good guy and he's here and he sounds great. But let me tell you, this guy was in the hospital.
Yeah.
And he's not doing fabulous, but he's here for the listeners.
And I put up, and Don, thank you very much.
He looks good enough on radio.
Don, how serious was my injury?
Well, if it had been a little lower, it could have been really serious. But you happened to break the part of your spine that has the best bracing, so good move.
I planned it that way. Thank you. And the apple tree's safe. if you want to see pictures of my CT and some little video clip and some of the things that happened to my body, please visit on us our Facebook page. GeekSpeak does have a Facebook page. Just go to Facebook, look up GeekSpeak, KUSP. You'll find it, and I put up a video of it. Still of my body in broken parts and such. And, yeah, at some point we'll put up pictures of the ladder that got destroyed that I was on, too.
It's actually worth looking at. It's kind of neat. The MRI and the animation, or the actual video of going through your body is pretty
Yeah, it was cool.
Pretty amazing.
And for live listeners that don't listen to the podcast, I did release like a 15-minute update yesterday, which talks a bit about the accident and some other things. So now's a chance to listen to the podcast if you'd like. All right. One thing happened while I was in the hospital, actually, maybe before, is that some guy found the next iPhone in a bar in Silicon Valley, and it was disguised like a 3GS, but then it was opened up, and Gizmodo took a look at it, and it was kind of an interesting story in that you could crack it open, really take a peek at it, and see what was inside it. Apple doesn't like this kind of thing. What do you think, Miles, of the new iPhone? You want one?
I have a phone that works, so I'm kind of torn about it.
You're in the
it's really nice.
Phone, right?
It's really nice to be the concept for iPhone OS 4.0, which isn't even going to be released until the end of the year. So it doesn't matter for when the release of the iPhone comes up in June, July. But the idea of being able to play Pandora in the background while I'm doing
talking
something
about multi-threading.
Else, multi threading, yeah. Multi-processing.
Multitasking, yeah. Meaning that you can run multiple apps at the same time.
Background apps.
In the background, yeah. Right? Which seems really important when you want to do music and also something else.
Or you can already do it with the iPod functions. Well, it's playing music that's already on your phone, but you can't do it with any other program, even if it like downloaded it first.
Right. You can play. You can use the iPod while you're playing a game, for example, on the iPhone. You can use the iPod function.
Really? Can you?
Yeah, we did currently. We did it on ours.
Okay.
Yeah, the actual built-in iPhone app, the player, the iPod in the iPhone, is actually kind of super functional. Like, it works all the time, especially if you have a headset with a controller right. on it. Yeah. But everything else
does
many,
no, actually, everything else does. Like, the built-in Apple apps, like
right.
Mail. Will pull for the mail servers and right. get more information in the background. The calendar will keep track of when an event is about to occur. The stopwatch and the countdown all work in the background.
Right.
But it hasn't been available to the general third-party
developer.
So
you're more excited about the OS than the actual phone. The phone, though, the new Apple iPhone that hasn't been released yet. Apple hasn't said anything about it except for Gizmodo, we want our phone back. So they did acknowledge that mm-hmm. it was theirs. But other than that, they're not saying anything. They're always pretty secretive about it. But it's got a front camera, which means you could do potentially video conferencing with the phone. It's got a really high-resolution screen. They don't know the specs on it, but it looks like an HD type of screen, mm-hmm. which, of course, makes a lot of sense that Apple's selling HD content on iTunes, so their device being able to play it makes sense. And a few other things like buttons and stuff being a little different and it looking a lot different. That kind of looks like the functionality. And they did open up and look
and
at the chipset.
And a front-facing camera.
Well, that's what I started with.
Oh,
yeah,
sorry.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And, of course, they also have a rear-facing camera that looks like a bigger lens. So, in general, it looks like some cool features. But Apple's always tight-lipped. And I was asking Al, you know a bit about Apple. You
sure.
are interested in the company and stuff. Why are they so tight-lipped? Why don't they just say, this is coming on the market,
well,
and they talk about it before it's available?
You know, there's a lot of speculation about it. Everybody's been blogging about this thing. And, you know, did Apple plant it? Is it a marketing scheme? Was it stolen? You know, all that. But rather than join in the fray of what everyone else is saying, I think I'd rather look at things from a different angle, maybe blow some dust off an old Silicon Valley folklore that might provide some food for thought. First of all, why does Apple want to keep these things secret? Why don't they just let everybody see the new phone? Why are they worried competitors will steal their ideas? Well, maybe, but it's not like everyone didn't figure out that the new phone would have a better camera, and the idea of a forward-facing camera is not new. There are probably a few things in there that are super secret, but overall, it's just a new, better phone. So why all this veil of secrecy? Mm-hmm. It all stems back to an event that happened way back in 1985. If you're old enough to have been sentient at the time, you're probably zoning out to MTV, singing along with Come On Eileen by Dexy's Midnight Runners. And I know I was up in Kenosha, Wisconsin, border bars, jumping around to Rock the Casbah, and, you know, listening to Der Commissar and Mr. Roboto. Well, there was a young computer company at the time that had been around for about 3 years. It was founded by a guy named Adam. Adam wanted to build a portable computer for the masses, and he did. It featured a 5-inch, 52-column display, two floppy disk drives, a Z80 microprocessor, 64K of RAM, and could fit under an airplane seat. It could survive being accidentally dropped and included included a software package that had the CPM operating system, basic programming language, and the WordStar word processing package, and the SuperCalc spreadsheet program. And it sold for $17.95.
What a deal.
Now, that was the future. Now, this is where the folklore kicks in. In 1983, Adam decided to boast about an upcoming product of his company months before it could be released. Kind of, you know, getting everybody excited about his new computer model coming out.
So he gets up on the stage and goes, "You should see this. This is so cool.
You should see this thing." Well, funny thing, when everybody heard the specs on this new computer, what do you think they did?
Well, they couldn't buy it, so they had to wait.
They stopped buying the current computer.
Oh, yeah.
This resulted in unsold inventory piling up. In spite of dramatic price cuts, sales never did recover for Adam. Losses continued to mount before any new products shipped. Consequently, Adam had to declare bankruptcy September 13th, 1983.
Now, never releasing the new product that he boasted about?
Couldn't. Well, it just was too little too late.
Yeah.
The name of the computer and the name of the man was Osborne. This became widely known as the Osborne effect. Now, the Osborne effect occurs when there's a pre-announcement of a product. Customers react immediately by canceling or deferring orders for the current product, knowing that it will soon be obsolete.
Right.
Steve Jobs.
Wait, does he? I mean, I get that exists.
Yes.
And it makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Is Steve aware of it?
Yes. This is the thing. Now, all this happened around 1983. Now, Steve Jobs in 1983 was sitting smack dab in the middle of Silicon Valley.
Mm-hmm.
When all of this went down with Osborne,
was he still the CEO at Apple at that time?
In 83?
Yeah, it was before he left.
I think it was before. Okay. Well, he wasn't there. And as a matter of fact, just before OS X came out, Jobs was concerned about announcing it, specifically referencing the Osborne effect. So maybe it's not so much the features that Apple wants to conceal. It's more about keeping the delicate balance of their product life cycle in check.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is something he experienced firsthand as his coming of age in the computer industry. He saw this happen. And so it's not so much they don't want to know that they have a forward-facing camera. Or you know, obviously, you're going to have a better camera. These things are real obvious. But pre-announcing this creates this Osborne effect, something that Jobs is keenly aware of.
Yeah.
And it's unfortunate that the entire effect is named after Osborne because it's happened lots of times to lots of companies.
Yeah.
For example, in 1978, Northstar Computers announced a new version of their floppy disk controller, which had double the capacity to be sold at the same price as their existing range. Sales of the existing products plummeted, and the company almost went bankrupt. Also, Sega.
No, here's the thing that doesn't make sense to me about this. I mean, I see that, but everybody knows that Apple's about to produce a new iPhone. If you go to any geek and say,
right,
should I buy an iPhone right now? You go, I would wait because they'll probably have one right before school starts.
Right, but before the Gizmodo leak, everything was in the rumor mill. And the rumor mill has talked about a front-facing camera for years.
And the thing is, we still kind of knew a phone was going to come out. So it's one of those things where it's because of that, just the slight, well, I don't know. Like, let's say I'm excited to get an iPhone. I've been excited to get an iPhone for a long time. I've never had one, right? I'm about to go buy one. And I go talk to Miles, and Miles goes, well, they're probably going to have a phone out in June, you know, or later. So I might wait. But if I'm excited enough, I might listen to that doubt in his voice and go, I'm going to buy one anyway, right? But now he says, I've seen the new camera, you know, phone. I would wait.
You've got a confirmation.
So it just finished.
It's, you know, now you know what it is. And, you know, like I said, Sega had done the same thing with their next generation gaming system. It was like 2 years after having launched the Saturn, they announced their new system. It basically led to Sega's downfall.
Oh.
As one footnote which to this story, the commercial rights for the Osborne brand name were later acquired by the Finnish clone PC maker Mikroog. And strangely enough, you can still buy an Osborne.
Cool.
I went and looked it up. You have to speak Finnish, though, because the website is in Finnish. And from what I can tell from my limited Finnish vocabulary, it has an Intel Pentium 4, a Core 2 Duo, and it runs Windows 7 and Vista. So, you know, go figure.
But are they also promoting their next product that isn't out yet all the time?
I wonder.
If I had
the
name, I'd have
to do it
that way.
It would almost be kind of cool to have an Osborne.
And like fakely talking about the new thing. You know,
you should see the new
computer.
One.
Oh, yeah. It'll turn you invisible at night. It's really cool.
Yeah. So that might be the whole reason that, you know, there's a secrecy. It's not so much the feature set. It's just the fact you're announcing the confirmation of it. It creates its effects, a delicate balance between your marketing and sales.
Yeah.
And I think that's where this is all, what this is all, you know, revolving around.
But at the same time, there is a reason for them to get that information out there, which is Android phones are getting out there. So, and one of the big pushes about Android phones is that they have background multitasking, that they have background apps, they have higher resolution screens, stuff like that. And if one of the things that Steve Jobs has always said was, if anyone's going to cannibalize my business, I want it to be us.
Right.
Want it to be the people who are not upgrading from a previous iPhone rather than migrating from a different phone.
So the balance gets a little more subtle in that if something else is more exciting and I say, I'm thinking about buying an iPhone, you go, well, a new one might come out. But have you seen the Android phone? That one's really cool. And I go buy an Android. It doesn't help Apple either.
But, you know, the thing to also consider, though, about Android, and this is something, you know, they've announced they're not going to build another Nexus One.
Right. I mean, is Google's hardware platform that runs Android, which is an OS that Google gives for free for phones.
So Google is like throwing their OS all over. It's going to be run. It's on all these different phones, and some of the phones do something, some of them don't. They had to come up with a new version of Android, and you know, there's two different UIs for the old Android, and it's already starting to turn into one of those Windows piles of soup where, oh well, if you have it on that machine, it's not going to run this, but you have to have this one, and it's getting to that point where,
on the contrary, it's more than Windows. This is turning into the Linux world. Where it's everything is very different from one another, and learning one Linux distribution
does not mean you know Linux.
So limited utility for another.
The appeal is there for a certain segment of society. I mean, there are those people that are the tinkerers and who want to really, you know, do some sort of customized thing. But you know, it's already starting to drift into that zone where it's starting to lose a little bit of its identity. I'm working on a couple of UIs for. The Android system, and you know, looking at their specs, it's really kind of jumping all over the place already. And I'm seeing this is the part that Apple is really good at, is they separate the engineering from the design. You know, you're the user experience. You know, you are the programmer, and then they get the people that are really good at what they do, and then they put them together. And I don't know, you know, just looking at the Google stuff, it just feels. You know, it feels messy to me, you know, because I have to deal with it. So I can see Apple's strength, at least in the user experience standpoint. Now, as far as the functionality of the programs, you know, you got to admit, when I saw that Google Goggles thing work, whoa, man.
Goggles is a thing where you take a picture. Well, go ahead and explain it.
Well, you basically take a picture of an object. It was just some dumb object in the office here. Ben had his phone, and it was the thing that said...
That was easy button?
It was easy. It's like a big red button. It just sits in your desk, and it says, that was easy. I don't know. It's got a light in it or something. It's just some weird thing, and I took a picture of it, and Google scanned it, and then came back with... Not only what the object was, but links as to where I could buy the thing, you know, and the stores it was in, like Staples and stuff like that. I was like, I was, you know.
It was impressive.
So I can say, you know, as a designer, I can see the differences and things. But, you know, I also can't talk about the technology in a bad way because, you know, Google's got a lot going on there.
Right. That's one of the things in the Android world is that you have all these... phone manufacturers that know that they're diverging, it's hurting their market, so they need to get together, but it's a culture of secrecy. And then you have Android itself, the operating system is Linux, but it's been forked from the main kernel, and so they're actually maintaining their own fork, and so there are initiatives to try to put that back into the main kernel trunk.
And I get the idea that the Windows analogy that you have, Al, that's saying there's so many different platforms that run it, and you never know what you can get. Some things to work someplace, and same thing with Linux. But prior to Android OS working, you had complete discrepancy. Like, there was completely different things. Right. Every manufacturer was doing something different.
Yeah, now, Java least, Mobile Edition was
and it was
horrible.
Some different versions, and you never knew how to get an app. And now, at least, there's some, you know, something's kind of wrangling in. And it's helped to some degree. I think Google stepping out of the hardware probably is going to help, right? It'll probably hone it down even more. Because there then won't be... the hardware competitor, as long as they support it really well. And there's great stories between like when Palm and Palm OS split apart, that effect actually helped the operating system and, well...
For Palm, it did.
Yeah. Okay, let's... and since you mentioned the Android phone and the person who was using it was Ben, and Ben's been gone. He's gone today. Right now, Ben's touring all over the place in Europe. He's been to 6 locations, and he has met 36 people. So that's pretty good. Stack. He describes meeting somebody as having at least a 5-minute conversation and exchanging names. So Ben's going out and being a little bit of an international
a social traveler. Geek. Who would have thought it?
I know it. He's, you know, I thought he had a face for radio, but he's actually a pretty attractive
guy.
He's
a rambling man.
Yeah. All right. So that's where Ben is. Do we have time for another story? I think we do. Yeah. What the heck? Are you guys back on Etherpad?
Yeah.
Okay, good. I lost mine. So, Miles, your story. Go for it.
The internet might fail on May 5th. dun, dun,
wait, 2012 dun. Or 2010?
No, this year.
Oh, really? What's
this
going
is
on?
In a few days. What's going on is the root level DNS, so the 13 main server centers that handle DNS.
Do you want to describe what DNS is?
Well, there's a lot of Spanish people there, and they're celebrating Cinco de Mayo,
right.
And they're all taken off.
And actually, and lime, I'll be with them. And so, lime inside a bottle to servers is deadly.
DNS is the internet phone book. So whenever you type in
www.geekspeak.org,
that's going to, your computer is going to a phone book saying, hey, what IP address is that? What's the phone number, you know, for that site? And then giving it back to your browser. And your browser actually makes a network connection by the IP address,
right,
analogous to a phone number.
So it's kind of invisible to users, it being used, but it's
right.
Been used all the time.
It's the backbone
yeah.
to how we use the internet. And
backbone.
What's going on, yeah.
It's the name of today's show, Backbone.
Yeah.
Ow.
What's going on is that the root servers are being switched over to use DNSSEC, Domain Name System Security Extensions. The idea being that DNS is the weak link. It's used everywhere, and yet it's the weakest link in the internet chain. And that
can you use the phone book metaphor again?
Not really.
Okay.
I don't have a metaphor.
I'll do the
ready
metaphor.
To go.
Is it like using that cheap yellow pages that you keep getting and you don't want, and they keep bringing it to you?
It's kind of like that. It's like normally you'd go and you'd grab the book, one of the 13 books from the shelf that would be that all have the same information, that all sync together, and they're the authoritative answer on looking up the website, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you'd look up the name and you get the number. Potentially, if someone was in the room with you and you weren't really paying attention and you went and grabbed for the book and they put the book in your hand quickly and then you grabbed it and you looked up the number, you might not have a book that's lying
or
to you.
Or more specifically,
right?
Someone could take the book, rip out a page, and then print out another replacement page and paste it in.
And you wouldn't be able to tell.
And you just go looking through there going, oh, here's the thing I'm looking for, and the phone number's wrong.
Right. And the,
taking
and the,
you to someone who's trying to bilk you for money, for example, to run a scam.
We all know these things where they send you a link saying, update your password at your bank. Something bad is happening. And you click on the link, and really it's not your bank. And all of a sudden somebody else that actually owns that website is logging into your bank.
Well,
in this scenario, you wouldn't even know if it was your bank or not. That's how dangerous it is.
Except if you go to the website, you end up with a certificate that gets read that goes like, hey, wait a second, the certificate doesn't match up with...
The SSL certificate, which actually has a counter to this. So what's
there is a way around it, except DNS security will help for times when you don't have that certificate.
Right.
It would help for making sure that if you weren't in an encrypted conversation, like putting in credit card information on Amazon, if you're just going to a general website, that you're sure that you're getting the website that you asked for.
And there's some real dangers of not getting the website you asked for. If you go to Adobe to download their beta version of software, normally that isn't secure. And so you're asking for something from Adobe, which then you're going to install and trust because it's from Adobe and it's an application, which then could run on your system, which would take advantage of you.
Right.
So there are some real reasons to have a better DNS.
But we're moving away from the story.
Please
why are we not having internet access on May 5th? And this is not to say that no one's going to. This is going to be usually corporations.
Real. Like, this isn't just a
stereotype. It's going to be mostly corporations, actually.
Okay.
Because many of them have routers when they're going out to the internet that only allow for DNS responses to be in a single UDP packet. Not going to get into what UDP stands for, but
the little packages that go around.
Mm-hmm. They only allow for them to be 512 bytes in size.
Oh.
Because typical DNS is a very short answer. It's a very like, hey, what is www.google.com? Here's this IP address. And you have some little overhead, but for the most part, it's a very simple question. When you have DNSSEC, you have a signature associated with it. So many times the packet will be upwards of like 2 kilobytes or split over multiple packets.
Right.
And many of these routers, these old routers that are at various companies, will be dropping them. They'll go like, oh, wait, this looks like a malformed packet. This is not the type of thing we'd be looking for. Now, the problem is not all the computers are going to be failing at the same time. Someone who turns their computer off at night, when they get up in the morning, a lot of times that cache is going to be cleared, they're going to go to a site, and it's going to fail. But the person who left their computer on all night, that DNS entry is cached in memory, so it's not going to ask the server again, and they're just going to be able to use it for most of the day, or in the next couple of days, depending upon the time to live value on the DNS entry.
So So we're going to see this happen on the 10th.
Starting on the 5th, and you're going to start seeing a staggered amount where some computers are going to be working and some aren't, and it's going to be, for IT professionals that don't know it's coming, it's going to be a nightmare to diagnose.
So the thing that I've been kind of frustrated with, that ISPs don't put better firewall protection for you, and we always say, get a router at home. Don't just plug in directly because you have a public IP address and people can sniff you. I always say, get a router. And I've been upset that ISPs don't actually do some filtering for us. If they were, we'd have problems, like serious problems at home connections, because the filtering and that smart stuff that's in the middle that kind of protects you at corporations
on the
is
contrary,
the thing that's going to fail.
ISPs are corporations, and they have this information, have routers at their various points, although they usually tend to be more robust, larger than a typical corporation. But they usually know about this. They know about the specs, and they're following along with it. I'm talking about a corporate IT department where someone just doesn't see DNSSEC coming down the pipe and going to test it. So this is not going to affect the typical user at home, most likely. It's probably going to affect some company out there that their IT staff is overworked, or they're small enough that they don't have an IT staff, but they do have a fast network pipe.
But speaking of the person at home, you've mentioned router a lot, and I know what that is. I know there's a bunch of companies. I just saw one from Cisco. It's supposed to be, you know, like the easy to use router, and then, you know, Linksys has their things, and
Linksys is owned by Cisco.
They're owned by Cisco now, but you know,
Netgear
and all these guys have these routers, and people are sitting here and you're talking about what, maybe just quickly explain what a router is so that it makes sense.
Yeah, and actually anybody that has a cable, well, let's see. So if you have a DSL or cable modem, that's the thing that actually makes kind of the phone call over the connection, and then turns that information into what's called a Ethernet, local Ethernet. And normally, if you plug that directly into a computer, the computer is going to get an IP address or a public IP, the phone number of the Internet, that is actually public-facing, which means that anybody can access it. And your computer, especially a Windows machine, has a whole bunch of kind of vulnerabilities. And if it has directly facing, people can connect to it and use it in ways you don't necessarily want them to.
Wait, is that the question you were asking about what a router is or what we use?
Well, yeah, that's why.
Yeah, he's just kind of giving it.
So what we suggest is you put what's called a router in that then gives a level of protection. And what the router does is it makes a sub-network. Instead of your computers locally being actually part of the Internet, it's actually Miles is stretching. It's a small box that has one port from WAN, which is Wide Area Network, and multiple ports from Local Area Network. If you connect wirelessly, you already have a router, and it gives a level of protection. What's the issue, Miles?
Okay, I'm having a problem because a router is a separate thing. A router can do NAT, which is what you're talking about, network address translation, can do port address translation.
Yeah, but it always does for home ones.
But what a router is basically getting packets from point A to point B.
Yes.
That's
and I,
that's
I'm just
it. Everything else is
because you mentioned it like 75 times, and I'm thinking, what if people don't know what a router is? And the thing about it is, you know, routers are, they range from like $25 to, you know,
thousands of dollars. Sure.
But a home unit, you buy them like at Staples, and there's a place with a whole bunch of boxes of routers.
Yeah.
Right. Very simply, a router is you have four computers inside your house, and they go through a box that routes all the packets from inside your house to one internet connection, and then that gets routed from the ISP to some other.
And there's lots of the routers.
The
routers in your home are not going to have this problem. This is not something that's going to happen in your home unless you're a geek and you're doing a whole bunch of filtering at your home, which some people do. So
and they deserve everything they get. if you're a geek and you're fiddling around with stuff, you also know that outages or mistakes are.
That's right. All right. I got to do the break. GeekSpeak on KOSP is supported by Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computers and electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio KOSP. This is GeekSpeak. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the air with me are Ben... can't believe I did that.
Ben's not here.
I looked into it. Ben's not here. And then I said,
I'm
Ben.
Sitting in his seat, though.
Oh, okay.
It's nice here.
Ben Lucklow and Al Luckow and Miles Elam. We're taking, well, I want to take calls, but at the same time, we have so much great news. So if you think your call is going to be better than our news story, you go ahead.
Whoa, it's going crazy.
Boom, I laid on the gun. Yeah. The phone numbers are 476-2800 or toll free at 1-800-655-5877. Al, instead of a you have a quick mention story, and I'll cue you for it. I've lost it. No. Oh, yeah. Post-its.
Post-its turned 30.
Ooh, That's yellow Post-its, right?
It's the, you know, the thing that the Post-it note. Mm-hmm. It's now 30 years old.
Today?
Yes. And it's been said, many things have been said about it, but it really, the design hasn't changed at all. It was designed by Arthur Fry and Spencer Silver. And they were actually last month inducted into the National Inventors Hall of Fame. Along with the inventors of the synthetic diamond. But this, you know, the Post-it note, literally, when they invented it, it hasn't changed since then. I think 3M has some, like, environmental thing that's got a new adhesive that you can get that's, like, safe or something.
And the great thing about the Post-it story, of course, is that they were making glue, and they made a batch that didn't stay stuck, mm-hmm. but was still kind of sticky. And somebody actually put it on paper and started using it like Post-its. And they finally, after a while, was like, this is marketable.
And it
wasn't driven by marketing. It was just driven by research.
It's just something that it can't get any better than it already is.
You know it.
Yeah.
All right. This is Geek Speak. Let's go on with the news story. Yeah. We got to stop using Etherpad. It's down.
Yeah, it keeps bombing on us.
All right.
It's like they don't want people to use it.
Yeah.
Etherpad is this great product we've been using, etherpad.com. And Google bought it a while ago, and on the top it says, new pad creation will be disabled on April 14th, 2010, which, of course, is in the past. And they haven't even updated that to say it was disabled. But it's still the pages that were already existing work, and it's this way for us to communicate together at the same time. And it's really cool. And in this, I've written, Miles, I want to do some stories today. So here is the host hat. Catch.
Okay. Hey, Lyle, I hear there's some news about Adobe.
Yes, thanks for asking. Yeah, my story today is Adobe CS, or Creative Suite 5, is now released. It was announced a while ago, and Adobe, of course, makes Photoshop and Illustrator and Dreamweaver, and these are all part of their called Creative Suite. They've got a few different other things as well. Flash is one of them. And the thing I wanted to talk about, actually, was Flash, and we talked a while ago about how Adobe kind of made this whole thing where you could make iPhone apps in Flash and export it, and the big thing was Apple changed their rules saying don't do this, just be breaking rules, and there's big discussion. You can listen to an old show about that if you want. But the thing that I thought was kind of cool is that Flash CS5 is actually allowing you to export to some degree to HTML5. And so I want to chat a bit about what HTML5 is and what the benefits are. Specifically, there's this thing called Canvas. And Miles, do you want to give a real break rundown on Canvas? Oh, wait, this is my story. I'm supposed to do that, huh?
No, it's just like an artist canvas. You have this blank area on a browser that you can say, okay, draw this line, draw this curve, fill it in with green.
Yeah. And the thing that's great about it is that you can do it with scripting. So traditionally, if I wanted to make a button really cool online and I wanted to have it like get bigger and like change its curves and its background color and all that, I would actually build that whole page or at least the whole navigation in Flash, and then it'd be like an application running, and then you hover over it and it changes. And if anybody's done website development and used Flash, they know that the complexity is anytime you want to change anything on your website, you've got to open up Flash and compile this whole new thing. And then, of course, it doesn't work all the time unless you have the Flash player, which most people do. But now with iPhone and the iPad, Flash doesn't work. So there's this kind of discrepancy. Now, additionally with this story is kind of this open letter that Steve Jobs wrote saying why he doesn't want Flash to be supported. And the general idea is that the web works so amazingly because of open standards. And the next open standard that kind of does what Flash does is called, in loose terms, HTML5. It's actually a whole bunch of things, which has been kind of bundled in HTML5. It's JavaScript, CSS, HTML5, which is actually the spec, and the integration they have together, including a new video tag, which allow you to embed a video like you would embed an image. And so that's kind of the synopsis, and I just wanted to let people know what HTML5 really was. It's the ability kind of to do video in a way that's anybody can do, and to do scripting of animation of things of that nature in a way that anyone can do without having an external product like Adobe Flash step in to play. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Yep.
The thing is, this has been functional for a while, and you can do most of this without using something like Flash. And the reason I'm excited about Flash is that a lot of people know how to do really cool things in Flash. So the actual environment to create drawings and do vector work to use it online, Flash is kind of the tool. You use it, Al?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, I'm not particularly a Flash expert, but I've probably done, you know, well over 1,000 Flash animations, or maybe even more than that, interactive CD-ROMs. I was one of the early people making CDs and interactive when those first came out.
Hey, so you were using Director then?
I was using Director. Sure. I used Future Splash, which is what Flash was before it was acquired by Macromedia, which then it was acquired by Adobe. However, the thing is, you really need to have a program of origin where you can have vector animation. I mean, even if you're not using the Flash Flash outputs as a Swift file, and then that's what you embed, and that's what the big controversy is over, you still need to create something. And when you need vector animation, I can't think of any other program that's better for it than, say, Flash. You know, you start out with vectors, which are resolution-independent shapes, so that you don't have to worry about what size it's going to be. You can stretch, and it doesn't lose any resolution. So starting out in Flash is actually a really good idea, basically because you can keep your workup all the way down to the beginning in vector. And then what you output as shouldn't really matter. I mean, Flash can output an animated GIF. It can output a QuickTime. It can output, the Swift files. It has all these different things. You know, why not have it output HTML5 stuff?
Right.
You know?
And so, because the Apple license agreement says the original language must be...
Well, that's for apps.
That's for apps.
We're talking about for websites.
Right. We're talking, why not just have Flash repurpose itself as instead of the final bundled package, it's basically just it's like Photoshop,
because then they start competing just on a tool set, and their tools are great, don't get me wrong. They are best of breed, but at the same time, right now it's the tools that make the binary format,
right,
it's not that only they can play, there are other Flash players, the spec actually is out there, but it's harder to chase the group that is making the spec in the first place.
What we're talking about when Miles says binary is that when you play, like if you go up to YouTube right now and you play a video, what you're actually watching is a Flash application. And that Flash application was created by Adobe Flash product. Some person at YouTube wrote this complicated media player that's functional really well in Flash, and then you have to be able to watch that. You have to actually get the plugin from Adobe, and the kind of tie-in means that Adobe produces the tools that make the content. Everybody had, like 90% of the people have this player, and so they kind of, anybody that wants to make content has to kind of buy the product from Adobe, and that's the real core. I mean, they gave away the player for free, and the thing is,
which really, is a great thing from Adobe's point of view,
a
wonderful thing. The question is, like, do other people want to buy Adobe's products? Because they're expensive.
Yeah. They're really expensive.
So I want to make an HTML page, I can buy, I can get Dreamweaver. And, or something else and pay hundreds of dollars for a great tool.
Yep.
Don't get me wrong. It's a great tool.
Adobe owns Dreamweaver, so they're...
Right. Yeah. But I can also open up Windows Notepad or Mac's Text Editor, Text Wrangler... and start, or VI on Unix, and write it as straight text. It's a lot more work, but it's still an option.
Right.
With a Flash movie, it's not an option. You have one choice to go with.
All right. Okay. I think we talked a bit about that. The one other thing is that, and I've had this posted up on the website, is about HTML5, video online, and the kind of complexities about that. It could be a whole show, but I read a great article I'm linked to today's show notes about kind of introducing you to video in HTML5 and the issues and what a codec is versus a package and how the whole new video tag is going to work and how you can start using that. If you start using that along with your website, that's how you actually get like an iPhone or an iPad to play video. You have to start using the video tag. That's kind of the way that Apple wants you to do it, and that's kind of the way you have to do it. So if you're doing Flash content, we got a call a while ago about, how do I make my content? Do I have to do multiple versions right now? Yeah, you have to be able to do multiple versions. And this article that I've linked up on the show notes after the show is over kind of describes what you have to do. So we actually have a call, so let's go ahead and take that. Since Etherpad is down, I got to go back to paper. You hear that?
Wow.
Sounds delicious. I love paper. Cindy from Santa Cruz, welcome to Geek Speak. Cindy, can you help me? Can you hear me? Can you help me? Hello.
I have a problem. I don't know how to think about troubleshooting.
Ooh, that's a good one. Go for it.
I'm totally naive about tech. Sometimes I can't type, so I can click around on the computer
with the mouse.
With a mouse, But then when I try to write letters where the flashing cursor is, nothing happens.
Interesting.
The only thing I know how to do is to check to make sure everything's tight, you know, all the connections.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes the router is loose, but then the guy that answered the phone asked if it was the keyboard, and then I started thinking, oh, well, maybe, you know, there's something wrong with the keyboard.
Rick's a smart cat.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's probably wrong with the keyboard.
Is it a wireless keyboard by any chance? Or Bluetooth?
Is there a cable that plugs into the computer from the keyboard?
Well, I had wireless and it stopped working, so then I got a cable.
Mm-hmm. Wireless keyboards do that kind of a lot.
Uh-huh.
That exact same thing.
When the batteries run out of space.
Yeah.
Is this
yeah.
a laptop?
No.
Okay. So it's a desktop machine and you've got a cable that plugs into it. Is it a Mac or a Windows machine?
Windows.
Okay. One thing you want to do, the cable that plugs into the computer, it's probably rectangular.
Yes.
It's a USB port. And it's probably the keyboard, though there's sometimes... Do you have a cable tray?
A cable tray.
I mean, sorry, a keyboard tray?
Keyboard tray. What's that?
It's like something that holds your keyboard under the desk?
No.
Okay. All right. So it's most likely the keyboard. Here's the thing with keyboards, and they're not that expensive, so getting a new one's not going to break the bank.
And it feels good. You get a new keyboard, all the spaghetti sauce and coffee stains you have on yours, it's all gone. You ever take your keyboard, pick it up, and flip it over, and all this weird tiny stuff falls?
Exactly.
Well, don't do it. Don't do it. Just get a new keyboard.
If your stomach is squeamish, don't do it. It'll gross you.
It's weird.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was getting at. It's like, you know, I know what the problem is, but you don't want to know.
Right.
Basically, all the dander that's coming off your body is going in that keyboard, and it just piles up in there.
Uh-huh.
And most likely what's happening is that when you depress a button, there's some gunk around it, and it's actually not – it's holding down that button. But that would actually cause
a repeat key. That would do a single key.
Unless it's like an escape button.
Mm.
Yeah, I know. It's probably, almost certainly, just the keyboard's fault.
I think it's worth investing in a new keyboard.
Yeah.
Simply, you know, go down to the computer store. They have them all out. You can put your hands on them, try them out. You know, it's like getting a new computer. You got a new keyboard.
Here's the other thing you can do, and this is the cheapest way possible to do it. Go talk to somebody. Like, get an extra keyboard laying around. Just ask around until someone says yes. Borrow it, see if it works.
Yeah, every geek has five keyboards lying around that they wish they had something to do with it.
You may not want to use it.
Here's a keyboard with my dander in it. The keyboard connectors, there's two different types for Windows. There's what's called a PS2, which is a round thing. It's purple. And then there's the rectangular one, which is USB. I don't know if you can buy a PS2 keyboard anymore, but one of the little tiny tricks is don't actually hot swap, don't unplug and plug in a PS2 keyboard, because you'll have you can potentially damage the motherboard. That being said, get a USB keyboard. If someone offers you a PS2 keyboard and it's free and you're really tight on cash, try it, but make sure you shut your computer down before you plug it in. You can have two keyboards plugged in the computer at the same time. That's fine.
Good grief.
Yeah. And that way you can get, put the keyboards apart from each other and get really confusing.
One keyboard for one hand, another keyboard for the other one.
That's right.
It works perfectly well as long as you can type that way.
It is possible this is a software problem. Some keyloggers, which is like a cracking tool, allows people to save the keystrokes, are actually interrupting the keystroke and saving the data and then continuing the keystroke, which is a software way of dealing with capturing data, if you will.
Wow.
I won't get into that. It's a possibility. So if you get...
That's a... fairly distant possibility.
It was done on Jurassic Park.
Right, but if it's a very distant possibility, but people do sell these things. They're about $40 and you can stick them in the computer. There's also software versions of this. It's a possibility. The reason why I suggest this is if you get another keyboard and it's a USB keyboard, plug that one in too.
I got to step in because this is going to scare a whole lot of people, including our caller. It is a possibility, and much the same way if someone comes into our office and they have a cough coming up, they might have Ebola, but it is very, very unlikely that they have Ebola.
So
it's
if
most
you have
likely.
Ebola, this is how you'll know.
Yeah.
Computer Ebola.
Dr. Don just had this problem with a guy that chest hurt, and all the things that it could be and the things that it was most likely to be were
just
much more simple.
Right.
Seriously, 95% chance that get a new keyboard,
Miles,
this is going to solve
virus?
The problem.
Yeah, that's true. Totally.
Okay, let me go back to the PS2 round and purple.
Yeah, just...
I don't want that or I do want that?
Try not to have that.
No.
Find the one with the rectangle. Find a USB keyboard.
Mm-hmm.
And it's
right.
B like Bob, not P like Patchouli.
Universal Serial Bus, USB.
And you have to have it. You have to have a USB connector in your computer. What kind of computer is it?
Every computer has had a USB in the last 10 years.
Look at your computers, Miles. I've seen you use things that look like they run on gas.
Yes, and they had USB ports.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you so much for the call. Bye-bye.
All right.
All right. Oh, gosh, that was so much fun. Let's take another call. I like that. So, Kel, Karen, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi. I need a new laptop.
Okay.
And I've seen a couple different processors. I think it's called a processor. It's Intel, something mm-hmm. or other, Pentium. And I was wondering what your opinion is on, I've seen a couple, the new ones, Core, is it 1.2, 1.3, and 1.5, or 2, 3,
Core
and...
i5, i7, i3, yeah.
Yeah, so I was wondering what your opinion is, if you've seen any, you know, if either through using them or you've heard anything about one better than the other.
What, you what are you going to do with your computer?
Everything. You know, mostly... I'm not into computer games or that much, but, you know, photos, word processing, spreadsheets.
Are you planning on doing video editing?
Video editing? Not mm-hmm. not so much.
And are you doing batch image processing? I mean, like, images that you're taking photos in the raw.
Like thousands of photos and doing weird things with them at the same time?
I might be. I that's one of my hobbies, so I'm going to get more and more, and I just got some, you know, Photoshop software, so I'm planning on getting more into that.
Let me ask you, how old's your current machine?
Well, my current machine is 3 or 4 years, and that's why I want to get a new one, because it's slow, yeah. and I think it has a bloodhound virus, and I want to get a new one, and so that's why I'm looking at the new stuff.
Mm-hmm. I think that anything you buy that's new right now, you're going to be happy with, as long as it's not like a microcomputer, you know, as long as it's not built for low or real high portability or something like that.
No netbooks or anything
yeah,
like that.
Don't do netbooks.
Well, actually, a netbook if it has an Ion... chipset,
yeah.
that would actually be okay.
It'd probably be better than it is.
But just
you don't
avoid
need
it.
A netbook right now unless you really want high portability.
Right, but if you're doing graphics at all, you want a bigger screen.
Yeah, you know? I agree. Yeah. But the thing is, you could get a netbook and they all have external screens, and then when you're at home, you've got a big screen.
Yeah.
Don't get a netbook. Really, you know, the processor wars, the real thing that they're about is high performance, right? And that's why we talked about video game performance.
Okay.
Processor is important. You're not playing video games.
Oh.
Video editing, sometimes really important. Though lots of times the graphics card is more important in that situation. And then the other one would be like batch processing. Like you're going to be doing a lot of number crunching. Like if you're a environment, if you're want to do analysis of weather data or something, right? You want tons of cycles. Then you're going to want a high processor. Other than that, get something that's in your price range, and you're going to do okay.
Okay, so you haven't heard like one of those, oh my God, it's failing, don't get that one?
Oh,
mm-mm.
I wouldn't say we're experts on that, though.
Yeah.
Considering all of us have Macs in front of
well,
us.
Well, yeah. Look for a name that's fairly common.
Another
I mean,
thing
a
do,
name like, yeah. if you've heard of the company before, you know, HP,
Acer.
IBM, Acer, Apple.
Dell.
Dell. Probably okay. If something comes up as being called... Tektronic,
yeah.
Go like, maybe that wouldn't be the best
and
idea.
Here's the thing about these, you know, if you go and look up the processor, look at the machine, and then you go and try to find problems with it, you'll find people complaining. So it's about the volume of complaints versus happiness. The thing that I always like to do before buying gear is I'll take a look at different models on Amazon. I won't necessarily buy from Amazon, but I'll be able to see what people's feedback is.
Oh.
And that feedback situation really tells me whether it's going to be a good product or not, that star rating. But
totally
more than the star
agree,
rating,
totally
the reviews.
Just beware of analysis paralysis because
okay.
you probably could walk into a computer store, buy a major brand name laptop, and walk out happy.
Yep.
So
okay.
that's the bottom line.
Great. Thank you. And then
thank
one
the
last
call.
Thing is when I get my new machine, I'm having a hard time. I got a little external... backup drive,
uh-huh.
and I'm trying to back up my old system so I can put it on the new system I get, and I'm having a hard time using it because it looks like it wants to sync things when I want to recover it, and I don't want to sync. I don't want 100% copy of everything I have. I want to pick and choose. I just want this subdirectory and that one, and so on. Is that possible to do?
You'd need just a utility, an app utility. There's a million syncing apps that you can choose which folders you want to sync. There's some that do the whole computer. There's some that run in the background that are constantly
you
going.
Some research on that. I don't
or,
know on Windows.
Or you could say, I don't want to think about this at all, and you buy a Mac.
You could do that,
with
yeah.
And use Time Machine.
Yeah. Oh,
honestly,
great.
Like
that's
it's a question of...
Do you have
of,
Apple stock?
No. If it's a question of how much money you're going to spend. Apple, you spend a little price premium, but at the same time, you're getting convenience.
Right.
Whereas if you want to save the money and you want to do the extra legwork, then you get Windows and you figure out which backup solution to get and implement it.
Yeah. Thank you very much for the call.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye. Well, we did one story a piece. That's pretty sad.
Yeah, I know.
Great content.
But we had good coverage, though.
I agree.
Yeah.
We got a couple minutes just to mention a few things you can do more research on yourself if you'd like. Apple product story?
Oh, quickly. Yeah. Quickly, if interesting, there's a website out there, and we have it linked on geekspeak.org, and that is that if you – it basically takes – if instead of buying the Apple product you bought long ago, you bought Apple stock, what would it be worth? For example, I had a PowerBook G3 Wall Street in 1998. If instead of buying the laptop, which actually I didn't even use that much, if I had spent the same amount on Apple stock, today it would be worth $164,300.
So right now, don't buy a new iPhone.
I think I have that laptop
Apple
somewhere.
Stuff.
I don't think I can.
Oh, you can't. You can't. Sell
I don't think
that?
I can. Bring it back and say I'm going to trade this for. But it's a neat website. You can go and see what units you would have bought,
and then how much would have been.
And it's a live update to the stock price.
See, I got to look for the first Mac.
So, like, if you'd have bought a G3 250 in 97
when they came out, right?
Instead of buying that and you bought stock instead, it would be worth $330,563 today.
Gosh, no.
And that's just in 1997.
Thank you. We'll have that website linked in geekspeak.org.
So I got a quick mention here. Saw a YouTube video talking about memristors. We covered them a year ago.
Yeah,
something like that.
It's the other theoretical electronic component.
Well, it's not theoretical.
Not theoretical anymore. But
right,
it was
but a... So you have inductors, capacitors, and resistors. And there was a fourth one that was postulated by a mathematician back in 1970 or in the late 60s. I'll put up a video about it. It's describing how to do it, how it works, what it is.
I want to see that.
And we couldn't do it before, so this will get some information.
Great.
It's fairly advanced, though. So
Geekspeak.org for this information. Al does have a USB of the week.
Yes.
Live in just moments, so wait for that. GeekSpeak on KSP is supported by Santa Cruz Electronics, offering extensive selection of computer and electronic parts, as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KSP, Santa Cruz. We're streaming and podcasting at kosp.org for GeekSpeak. I'm Lyle Troxell. Today, Al Luckow, Miles Elam. And, of course, GeekSpeak is a registered service mark of online tonight with David Lawrence, and he's used with permission from the puppet master himself. Al?
Yeah, I found a couple of USB devices that seem to go together. One of them is the USB ashtray. Now, I don't know if that is important or not to a lot of people out there. I mean, to me, it seems that, you know, if you don't want to get ashes in your computer, maybe you shouldn't be smoking at your computer, and let's not go into that whole thing. But this thing, it's USB powered or operates on two AA batteries, and it's supposed to be just an ashtray that sort of sucks in the smoke.
One of the
so
things,
if you're smoking and you don't like smoke, well, you know, the obvious thing is maybe don't smoke. But if you're smoking and you want to keep it somehow filtered, it has this. There's a USB ashtray available, and of course we have that linked on geekspeak.org. And there's another thing that might go well with this. The wooden USB keyboard. Now, this is kind of neat because I found this online, and oddly enough, they're all refurbished. So you can't buy a new wooden keyboard.
So you think it's a good match because then you're smoking next to some wood.
You can smoke next to a wooden keyboard. It just somehow, the two seem to go together really well.
Like
a refurbished
lounge.
Wooden keyboard. Yeah,
of course. Yeah. Because you have to be refurbished because you have to have the cigarette pits removed and buffed out.
Yeah, because you could just, like, you know, put your cigarette out on the keyboard and make these neat little
patterns,
you know.
Thank you for the crazy USB of the week, mm-hmm. Al Luckow, Miles Elam, thank you very much. We'll be here again next week. If you want to know more about what we did today on the show, you can, of course, go to geekspeak.org, look up today's show, which is the 1st of May, 2010, and find out all the links and more information, read more about it. Of course, we're available online via email and stuff. I actually check my email. I'll definitely read them. Don't know if I'll respond, but I'll definitely read your email. Car Talk is next on KOSP, and Car Talk is made possible by a grant from the Holly Family Fund at the Community Foundation of Santa Cruz County, and we appreciate their support. So come visit us online at geekspeak.org. Tell your friends. Write reviews on iTunes for KOSP and for GeekSpeak. I'm Lyle Troxell. Stay tuned now for Car Talk. Thanks for listening.